Good morning and welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Well, every year, certainly, we are reminded just how destructive tornadoes can be. This morning, in this part of Focus, we are going to be talking about a different kind of weather, and that's winter weather. This is the week that has been set aside here in Illinois and in Indiana by officials to get people thinking about the fact that soon we will have extreme winter weather. It will be cold, we could have a lot of snow, and it's something that one should be prepared for. And in fact, on average, in the United States, winter storms and extreme cold lead to more deaths than do tornadoes. But it's not the kind of thing maybe we think about quite as much as tornadoes, and so that's one of the reasons that we're doing this show here this morning. Our guest is Ed Kieser. He's our chief meteorologist, and he's here to talk a little bit about winter weather. Now, before we get into it here, I just would like to make sure that people understand that this is not we can't do the talk to you thing. We'll do that tomorrow, and there'll be some of those before the Thanksgiving holiday. So please, if you have one of those questions about you're traveling and you'd like to give a forecast for the place that you're going, we're not doing that this morning. Save that. We'll do that tomorrow morning and also next week. But if you do have other kinds of questions about how weather works, about weather terminology, about weather forecasting, any and all of that, I know that Ed will do his best to give you an answer. 333-9455. That's the number for Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one is good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So 333-WILL or 9455, and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Well, thanks very much for being here.
It's good to be here.
Appreciate it. I'm looking here at the weather page of the Weather Service, and they have some information here on winter weather and so forth. And one of the things that they have here is that, in spite of what people might be thinking about things getting warmer, that there has not been a winter in Illinois in the last 100 years that has not had at least one severe winter storm. And the average is 5 on average. So, I mean, some people might say, well, gosh, it seems like over the last couple of years, maybe it's been dry. We haven't had a lot of precip, but that doesn't mean that we won't have storms. And in fact, last year, well, no, it was this year. It was earlier this year.
Yeah,
we had a heck of a
last season.
A storm. And yes, last winter.
We had a big snowstorm on February 13th and 14th. Of course, that was a blizzard. It closed the University of Illinois down for 2 days and really closed down the whole area for a while. And that was right around Valentine's Day last year. The big snow hit on the 13th, but we had the remnant effects of it on the 14th as well. So that was our biggie last year. And one of the bigger snows that we've had, depending on where you measured it, here at WILL, we had about 14 inches in our record snowfall in Champaign-Urbana for one storm is 15 inches, and that occurred back at the beginning of 1999.
Mm-hmm. So that should remind everybody that we can have these storms, and we're going to have these storms, and that it can pretty much shut everything down. So you do need to be prepared.
That's correct, and there's a lot of things we can talk about as we go through the day. I think one of the things as far as preparing, I'm guilty of not doing all that I should.
Oh, yeah,
I shouldn't even admit that,
but
but on the other hand, I'm not going to complain if I don't get the help I need. And basically, emergency managers suggest for any kind of disaster, be it a winter storm, a tornado, a flood, you should be prepared to be on your own at least 72 hours or 3 days. Mm-hmm. You can't expect emergency workers to come to your house immediately after a storm when it's a widespread problem. And we really learned that from Katrina in New Orleans in 2005, 2 years ago, that, for all the problems that there were that have been well documented, even if you had a perfect response, there still would have been people that would not be attended to for many, many days. You just can't serve everybody immediately in a disaster of that magnitude. And one thing about a winter storm is it covers a much wider area than one tornado path. So it does affect the entire area. And here in the Champaign-Urbana area, probably the last really big problem we had that lasted many days was the ice storm of 1990 on Valentine's Day of 1990. Some were without power in town for a week.
Yeah.
And you have to be prepared to at least be able to go it on your own for at least 3 days. And that means you should have some food around that doesn't have to be refrigerated or cooked. You should, of course, have plenty of water. I've read some suggestions of a gallon of water per day per member of the household. Now, I have some water. I don't stockpile that much water. Maybe I should. Because really, we should be thinking about other non-weather related disasters that can occur as well. And it all goes with that as far as being prepared to go without electricity, go without heat for several days.
Yeah. So certainly anything that you have to have, you should make sure that you have medications, for example.
That's a very important thing. Yes. And if a winter storm's coming, don't count on, oh, well, it'll pass in 1 or 2 days, and then I can just go out to the store. If you're running low on medication, make sure you get that prescription filled, because that's one of those bad stories we hear about in these disasters is people, I don't have my medication. And sometimes it's unable to be delivered timely fashion. And I know all emergency workers try to do their best to take care of everybody as much as possible. But when you're talking about a widespread area with tens of thousands of people, that's just a daunting task.
Yeah. And if you're someone who does a lot of traveling by car, and particularly if you're going to be outside of the urban areas, then there's also probably a fairly standard kind of checklist of things that we suggest that you have in case on the chance that you might end up being stuck and that you might actually have to wait in your vehicle for help to come.
Yes, that is correct. I think, though, that what we'll talk about there should be last ditch efforts, and hopefully you're not in a ditch for that last ditch effort. First thing you should do in the winter is pay attention to the weather forecast and rearrange your schedule if the weather looks threatening. I know that there are times where the weather may be a nuisance but still passable, and then there's other times where it's impassable and sometimes in between. And if I have to take a long trip, I'd prefer to not even deal with the nuisance. Every once in a while we have to, but really prioritize. Is this trip really that important? Is it worth going out there and risking your life? And even if you're the perfect driver, I know there's a lot of people out there that aren't, and they can affect your trip as well. So the first thing you should do is pay attention to the weather forecast and be up to date on the weather. And if it looks at all threatening, but you're going to make the trip, make sure you let other people know the route you're going to take and when you plan to take it. So if you don't arrive at your destination, there isn't a lot of wasted effort in trying to find you. Others at the other end can say this is the path they were going to take. So this is where you should check. And, of course, if there's a winter storm warning, ice storm warning, or blizzard warning, any type of warning of that sort, just don't go. Don't go out there. That means the weather is going to be really bad. And don't put yourself in harm's way. Or that of the emergency rescuers, too, because they're put in harm's way when they have to come out and retrieve you. Having said all that, if you are going to travel, you should make sure your car is in tip-top shape. That means the battery should be strong, your tires and brakes should be in good shape, your defroster is working, your heating system, of course. Make sure the antifreeze has been checked. All the winterizing items. I'm sure the next time you have Rick Karch in here, he'll be talking about winterizing the car. And also make sure you have a safety kit with you with blankets and some non-perishable food items and a good flashlight. And you should take your cell phone. Now, that doesn't preclude telling others where you're going because cell phones don't always work.
Yeah.
And especially if you're out in rural areas, you may not get a signal. So you can't bank on the cell phone, especially if you're a city dweller and it works all the time. You can't count on it absolutely working where you happen to be. So, but it's good to have your cell phone charged and ready to go.
Yeah. Good things to keep in mind, as we know that it's not going to be all that long before we get into, well, first of all, climatological winter will begin December 1st, and then we know that there is a good chance we will have severe winter weather. And as I mentioned at the beginning, for the state of Illinois and Indiana both, this is Winter Weather Preparedness Week. And the idea is that officials in both states are just saying to people, be aware that we will have winter storms. And it's a good thing to do a little bit of preparation just to make sure that you're ready when that weather comes. And if you have questions about that, you have questions about winter weather, you can give us a call, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Something I just wanted to ask you about, and I know, you know, we have talked about long-term forecasts and, you know, how accurate they may or may not be. But here on the Weather Service page, there are winter weather outlooks they have up here. And it's for the period of what will be climatological winter. So that's December, January, and February. And what they are predicting is for the state of Illinois, as far as temperature is concerned, I'll use average because you like that, above average. And the outlook for precipitation is also above average across central and southeast Illinois. And I guess that what I'm wondering is about, well, what do you have in your head what the averages actually are? So what exactly does that mean?
Well, as far as temperature goes, above average means over that 90-day period, the odds are tilted toward temperatures running warmer than what we, over the 30-year period of 1971 through 2000, had. And it depends on which part of winter you're looking at for precise temperatures. But once we get into the middle of January and early February, the average high temperature is in the low to mid-30s around here in the lows in the upper teens, I believe. And so warmer than average means we'll probably have, if the outlook pans out, we'll have some of those warmer days. In recent winters, we've had a lot of days that have been where we've hit 50 degrees in January or February, which is not typical, but we've had, I think, more occurrences of those than we used to have. But that doesn't mean that it's going to be warm through the 90-day period. As far as precipitation, that doesn't isolate rain versus snow. It just says higher than average. And our average precipitation is actually less in winter. In January and February, the average is a little bit below 2 inches for each month. So over that climatological period, about 7 inches of melted down precipitation. And all you need is a couple good rainstorms in winter and you go above average. Snowfall on average is 26.5 inches here in Champaign-Urbana for a whole winter season. We don't hit that very often. And unless we get a couple big winters here in the next 3 years, I think we're going to be seeing that average go way down when they're recalculated, because we'll be pulling out the 70s and adding the first decade of the 21st century.
Yeah. It seems to me that with the last couple of winters that we have had more precipitation in liquid form than we have had snow. Of course, again, if the anomaly being the blizzard that we had.
Well, even before the blizzard, we had a lot of rain last winter, which really recharged the soil moisture quite well. The subsoil was good. I'm sure that helped the crops around here as we got into some dry periods over the growing season, but the roots could go down and find that moisture. And that was very important going into the growing season, that we had a plentiful moisture over the winter, because since then it hasn't been all that wet. And snowfall, we actually ended up below average here for the winter, even though we picked up 20 inches in February. Outside of that, we had less than 6.5 inches. So we were just slightly below average on snowfall last year, but about as close as we've gotten in a while. We've had a lot of snowless winters.
Yeah, okay. So I guess maybe if people are thinking about what at least the outlook is now, it sounds like maybe as far as temperature is concerned, it might not be that different from last winter. But as far as precip is concerned, if this pans out, well, maybe a little bit wetter than last
winter. Yeah, although last winter was pretty wet. So I guess that outlook isn't indicating a big difference. But, of course, the devil's in the details. Yeah, absolutely. Looking at a 90-day period and averaging it all out, and each year there are specific events. And
any one day or a couple of day period, you could have almost, it could be really warm, it could be really cold, you could have a blizzard, you know.
Well, my other experience here, this is anecdotal, but if you could go back over the last several winters, usually there's just one month in which we get hammered. And this last year was February. I can recall a couple of years ago it was early December, and I thought, uh-oh, we're going into a tough winter. And then from January 1st on, we had less than 2 inches of snow, which was just unprecedented. But all the snow for that season, or the majority of it, came in the first 2 weeks of December. So every year it's different, and it seems lately that we just have one month. It's a different month every year that we get nailed.
Yeah, the last really big blizzard we have with, do I remember right, that was maybe, was it on actually on January 1st?
Yeah, or the 2nd. It started on the 1st and went into the 2nd, that big snowstorm of 1999. It's, the snow actually started falling on the evening of New Year's Day, and the 2nd was the really big dumping.
Yeah, I remember shoveling out my driveway. That's the thing I remember. One of my neighbors took pity on me and came over and helped.
That was nice of your neighbor.
He was a great guy. Let's talk with some callers here. We'll start out with somebody in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we might talk about is how to protect your house if the power goes out for several days. Then the other thing I wanted to mention was two more things. One is that a lot of people who haven't lived here for a while and haven't experienced high winds with small amounts of snow, relatively speaking, and don't realize that it can seem okay in when you're in a town, but if you're going on the rural roads or on the interstates, you may end up with whiteout conditions, even though it doesn't seem like it's bad where you happen to be. And I try to clue in folks coming from other states or from other countries that they really need to listen to WILL, because you talk about those things. And not everybody does. The other thing I would like to say, this isn't in terms of severe weather, but one of the things that I've realized, I don't know how long it took me to figure this out, but even with small amounts of snow, you can protect yourself and other people who are walking if you get even small amounts of snow off your sidewalks and driveway, because it seems that when people walk on the snow, it compresses it. Then it melts a little bit and it turns it into ice. I've been really amazed at how quickly the snow evaporates or sublimates, even if you don't get it totally off. Our sidewalk is on the north side, and it gets some shading from trees and shrubbery. But even those places that don't get direct sun will be dry within about a day if I take care to get out there and get even small amounts of snow shoveled. It makes a big difference for people trying to walk, kids getting to school, people trying to get some exercise in the cold weather if we have safe walkways. So three things for you, but you might comment on things that people might think about with regard to protecting their plumbing and so forth if there's an extended power outage.
Okay.
I'll address all those things. Although I think the sidewalk issue, I'm not going to talk about as much as some others, because really it depends. There's just so many variables as far as when to shovel, how much to shovel, and this and that. And my personal experience is that there's a wide variety of cases. I know what she means. If things get packed down, then it gets icy and it's very hard to walk out there. But I've also seen cases where people shovel the sidewalk bare, and then we get into the freeze-thaw cycle. If you have a pile of snow that starts to melt onto the sidewalk and then it freezes up at night, then you have that nice sheet of ice that you can fall on. And I think just for whoever's walking, you have to use caution in the winter and be aware that there could be ice, especially when you can't see at night. Mm-hmm. And people should do their best to try to keep their own sidewalks around their homes clean. But I know on some occasions I feel more comfortable walking on snow than when you have the sheet of ice on the sidewalk. So I don't want to get into a debate over that whole issue. I know the city of Champaign has had that debate with
for businesses,
in the downtown areas. And I know here on campus, that was a big issue with the closing the campus at, on short notice of that blizzard. The roads were getting pretty clear, but the sidewalks were a mess. So people started walking in the roads, and really it's hard to clean the sidewalks when roads and driveways are being plowed out and the snow is being thrown up into the sidewalks. So we all have to just do our best and help each other out there. The town versus rural, that is a very good point, and I'm glad that the caller noted that we do talk about that on WILL. All you need is an inch of snow, and if there's a lot of wind, that can cause whiteout conditions in the countryside, even though it looks perfectly fine in town. I've even noticed driving out to Parkland College on the edge of town, you start to get the whiteout conditions there, where you just go a couple blocks into town and there's a little bit of snow on the road, but no big deal. And the wind is a big factor. And I think around a lot, I know my frustration as a meteorologist going into a snowstorm is a lot of people want to know exactly to the inch how many inches of snow we're going to have. And a lot of times, what's more important is what's coming with the snow. A one-inch snow with high wind is much more of a travel problem than 3 inches of snow and no wind, for example. Mm-hmm. Because you can drive through snow if it isn't blowing around. Obviously, if you get 6 or 8 inches of snow, that's a big deal. But we do try to play up the wind effects when that happens. And oftentimes, a lot of other places jump on that at the, after it's already happening, because they're just reading a forecast that doesn't really tailor to those sorts of things. So we do try to play that up once when we know it's going to happen. And that's been kind of one of my secret success areas forecasting in the winter, is watching that wind. As far as the home goes, there's a lot of things we could talk about there. Basically, well, I guess she mentioned the pipes. One thing you can do is, if the power's out and the heat's out, you can run the water at a very, very slow drip to keep things moving. Because probably the biggest damage you can cause to your home in winter is a bursted pipe. Oh, yeah. Water just messes everything up. Another thing in the home that is pretty dangerous is sometimes using space heaters incorrectly. Keep them at least 3 feet away from walls and furniture and other combustible items. Make sure the wiring is in good shape. Make sure you follow manufacturer instructions with space heaters. And try to avoid using extension cords with space heaters. And, of course, anything, you don't want to use any combustible heater, a gas heater, inside the house, because you can have the carbon monoxide problem. And it is recommended that people have carbon monoxide detectors in their homes. Yeah, that's the odorless gas.
That's particular. It's a thing I know we've talked about with the various of the species when they've been on the show, particularly to caution people about use of kerosene heaters. Those are things that are really made for heating things like garages and shop buildings and things like that, where there's plenty of ventilation. And I think actually, if you look at them, you look at the instructions that come with them, they'll say, you should, if you're going to use this, you should actually crack a window. You know, you need to make sure that you have good ventilation, because those things are that's not really what they're for. They're not for bringing into your living room and then sitting it there. It's for being out in some kind of outbuilding someplace.
Then don't just say, hey, let's have a barbecue inside.
That's another thing.
Some people do that.
Don't bring your charcoal barbecue.
So with all the heaters and all, you follow the safety instructions that come from the manufacturer.
Right.
But anytime you're using combustibles, make sure there's good ventilation.
Our guest here is Ed Kieser. He's our chief meteorologist. We're talking about being ready for winter weather, which is coming. It's coming any day now. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455 is the number to call if you have questions. Here we have someone in St. Charles, line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Hey, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I can see that S-W-S-N-O-W word coming up. I don't like that. the reason I called that is I was wondering, you guys are talking, because I'm up here, and you guys are down there, you seem to get a lot more weather-related stuff than we do. Because of where I'm at, I'm like directly west of St. Charles, of Chicago. For some reason, it seems like it goes around us here. Now, I've been out here for 20 years, and the last 8 or 10 years, it's gotten less and less as far as snowfall and precipitation. Like you guys have been saying, we're supposed to get rain for this general area. I've been hearing that for about 3 weeks now, and we haven't gotten a drop at all. It's just been cloudy, overcast, and like today, it's very windy. But I wonder, is it getting drier out this up north, the north end of it, or I don't know, is it, you know? And I wanted to add one more.
I think we lost the caller. He must have hit a space where his cell wasn't working. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm not sure what his last point was going to be, but maybe you can, if you can, talk generally about the. And I think actually, though, as we were talking over the last, I don't know how many years here for us in the central part of the state, it has also been dry. You know, it's not like we've gotten a lot of precip over the winter. We might have gotten one or maybe two good storms, which would mean several inches, you know, 3, 4, 5 inches. But generally speaking, it actually here has been pretty dry the last few winters.
Well, I didn't bring in all my climatology statistics from the last 10 years. I do maintain a table on precipitation by month over several years. And, you know, we've had ups and downs. I think he was looking more at the general because he talked about it hasn't even rained there in the last few weeks. When you look at Illinois as a whole, there have been pockets that have been very dry and other areas that haven't had as much problem. And in the last couple of years, it seems that northern and west central Illinois have had more problems with drought and dryness than farther south and east. When you look at the big long-term picture, now shorter term, there's always more variability. So northern Illinois has been in particular rather dry over the last couple of years, or a good portion of northern Illinois. So that's what he's noting. I don't think there's anything that the city of Chicago being to his east doesn't really have much to do with that. Some of that's just the variability in things. If you look at the longer term picture, when you look at annual rainfall, the annual rainfall has actually gone up a little bit over the last few decades. So we're not seeing a climatic shift in the big picture to drier in general. We're actually seeing a little bit more in the way of wet weather, and we're seeing more extremes in rainfall. When we get some wet weather systems in the summer, there tends to be more episodes of heavy rainfall. And if there's any climate change that we've really noticed in the Midwest, that seems to be the one item that's increased a little bit. Now, of course, each episode or event does not occur at every location, but that's been the case. Now, as far as winter weather goes, as far as snow, we've generally had below average snowfall most winters for the last two decades. Since I've been here, we've been running below average more than not. The average is kind of a misnomer, too, because all you need is one huge winter that can skew the numbers. And we hardly ever have that average or normal. We're usually somewhere else. And in many winters, we've been below on snowfall. There has been a definite decrease in annual snowfall in the last couple decades around here. And that's why I say when the statistics, the 30-year averages are recalculated after 2010, I think the averages are going to go down dramatically compared to what we usually see. That is unless this winter, next winter, and the winter after, we end up with lots of snow. But we are going to throw out the 70s and add this decade, first decade of the century. So snowfall, we're below average. Now, as far as precipitation in winter, we're not necessarily below average. In fact, last winter, we had a lot of rain. So it's just been a change in the type of precipitation that we've seen. Some winters have been dry, others have been wet, but most of them have been with less snowfall.
Okay.
And I don't know if he's back.
I think we got our caller back. We lost you for a second there. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was driving. I should have pulled over. You know, the other thing was, too, that lady had called in earlier about removing snow from the sidewalks. Well, I do commercial development. I do a lot of the snow removal stuff, and what we have used is that we have to, unfortunately, take the snow off. What I have done is mixture, you know, put sand, silica sand mixture on the sidewalk so that if it does refreeze and thaw again, we have sand or some kind of grit on there. There's like a pumice grit we can use, too. because at my place, I normally don't clean the sidewalks off. And if I did, I use that sand.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, you brought up the fact that people slip and fall, and if you're opening up for a lawsuit. And I thought I'd throw that out there. You guys, thanks for the information, yep. By the way. Bye.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, that is true as far as the slip and fall. And I'm not a legal expert, but I've talked to attorneys about that sort of thing. And if you have an unnatural accumulation of snow and then water goes from that snow and freezes, then you have a situation where you can be susceptible to a lawsuit.
Hmm.
Whereas if it's a natural accumulation, that's an act of God, and that's not something that you've created. Of course, then you still might have to remove the snow if there's local statutes there, and it's just that's a topic I really you can really get into a huge debate on. I will say, as far as the melting and refreezing, that tends to be a problem as we get into the latter part of winter, from middle January on. That's because the sun angles start to get higher, and as the sun gets higher, there's more melting effects of snow. And even if the air temperature is below freezing, the sun, anything exposed to the direct rays of the sun can melt.
Mm.
And that creates water that will then freeze as soon as the sun goes away if the temperature is below freezing. And then that makes a nice sheet of ice or black ice, which is a hazard on the highway as well.
Mm.
So that's something I think I would caution pedestrians and drivers to be aware of after a snowstorm. When there's still lots of piles of snow around, and from plowing and shoveling, that you can get into that freeze-thaw cycle, and really, I hope I don't fall on it at all. But I think a lot of people have to realize that just happens, and you have to try to take care and not expect everybody to make every sidewalk and road perfect, because that's impossible too, to make everything just perfect. And but that is a point. That's why I didn't really want to get too much into that topic, because that's the opposite end. You want to shovel things to make it easier for people to walk, but then you have that other issue that could pop up.
Well, we have plenty of time here for questions. If you have questions about winter weather, about weather forecasting, you can give us a call. Talk with our meteorologist, Ed Kieser, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Salem, line number 4, toll free line. Hello.
Hi, Ed. Every year I get a persimmon and open it up, the seed, and this year it's showing a spoon of a little, fork prongs at the top, which traditionally means wet with mild temperatures. Just thought I'd throw that in. It's sort of interesting.
Well, that's what the Weather Service is.
Yeah, well, that's the weather. Well, what is it? The legend of the persimmon seed: a spoon means snow, and a knife means cold. And
spoon means moisture, a knife means severe, and the fork means mild.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it's raining, because a spoon, if it's just a spoon, you usually think of it as a scoop for scooping up snow. But
mm-hmm.
So the persimmon and the Weather Service are in agreement.
Okay.
We don't know the woolly worm forecast yet, or the woolly bear caterpillar. No.
Haven't seen too many of those. I had another question. I'm in Marion County, southern Illinois,
mm-hmm.
and every time we're supposed to get rain, it comes in from the west, St. Louis. It'll hit Carlisle. It'll come into just the edge of Salem and then goes over, and it splits. And this, I've lived here almost 30 years, and it does that all the time. Is there any reason for that? We have Carlisle Lake. We have Forbes Lake near us. We also have a manufacturing plant that uses mothballs to grind wheels, and when they're grinding wheels, the mothball chemical stuff comes up in the air. It stinks the whole town up.
No, I don't think there. Well, there's another topic that's hard, because what you're describing is what I hear from people in Champaign, Urbana, and other cities, and just about everywhere. And I guess the question I have is, well, first off, this is not meant to be, I don't know, impolite or whatever, but if you say it always happens, does that mean nothing grows there? Does it never rain?
We are one of the driest. Right now, we were 10 to 7 inches below normal. And
right, but a lot of places are. I guess what I'm going to say is, you know, right now there's a lot of places that are dry. And there's variability on rainfall all the time, but I think a lot of that's more perception than reality. I think if you were to take actual measurements of rainfall over a 20-year period and take them at the other places that you perceive and other people perceive as getting more rain, a lot of times you'll find out in the long run it's going to even out. And you're not alone in that perception. I hear it all the time, but there's no physical evidence to back that up, is I guess what I'm saying.
Well, what I observe is, unless it's a really massive storm, it will split. And I just didn't understand why. I heard the caller from up north say that it splits over his, it was Elmhurst or something he was calling from. Anyway,
I'd like to hear from the people that get the rain before it splits then, because all I hear is, what I'm saying is you're not alone in what you observe, but I've looked at this, and I think statistically there's more perception there than there is fact, as far as I don't think it's a case where Marion over the last 20 years has gotten, say, 20 inches less rain than some places 10 miles to the west as the storm approaches.
Actually, it's more narrow than that, but I just was curious as to why there are splits occurring when you'll see a heavy storm coming and then it just dissipates and
right.
then goes around you.
Yeah. Okay.
Have you noticed, I'm sure, the more violent storms than we've usually have years ago? Or it seems
you mean
like
thunderstorms?
The
or
winds and the...
Oh, wind.
Yeah, the storm. Well, I think that is, I think earlier Ed actually did say that there, yes, in that we've seen more. Do we see more severe
storms? We actually
see
more episodes of heavy rainfall,
which goes
against this a little bit. I think the first thing, I will go back, and if anybody has statistics and wants to show me about the storm splitting approaching any city, I'd love to see it. Good, solid evidence. I'd love to see it because I haven't seen it yet, but a lot of people notice this. This is what we throw in anecdotal evidence category. I think there's no real orographic effects here. We don't have mountains per se that would really channel storms too much. I do think a lot of thunderstorms only have a life cycle of about a half an hour. So if you see one approaching, odds are it's going to weaken. Other ones will start to form maybe over you or to the east of you or south or north of you. So in that regard, a lot of that is just randomness. And so anything you notice coming in from the west is going to dissipate. A lot of times the heaviest rain is in a very narrow band. So odds of it hitting your house, as is the case with a tornado, on any particular day is very small to get the heaviest rainfall. But sometimes it will happen, and I think every once in a while you probably do get the big gully washer, but more often than not you see it not at your house but somewhere out to the west, northwest, or southwest. So I think a lot of that is perception, that just by what we observe is not exactly what would be bared out if you were actually able to take measurements. As far as what the other part was, the windstorms, we had more wind this past spring than in some past years. That varies from year to year. I think we actually went through a period of benign weather overall in the 80s, and you could go back in history, and there were extremes in the weather in the 30s and in the 50s, and we're talking about hot and cold and tornadoes and all of it. So I don't think we're in a period where everything's going more extreme. I think that it's maybe we were in a period of less extremes than usual. And so I wouldn't be overly worried about that, but we do seem to have had more extreme weather in the last decade or so than we had in the prior decade. But
I have one more question.
Sure.
I'll ask and get off the phone.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know if the our government or any government does any weather experiments, like I don't know if it would be called cloud seeding or anything.
There's not much of that anymore. That was more in the 1960s, 50s, and 60s, and then some lawsuits arose. I know in Pennsylvania, after some cloud seeding, one area got a flood, and they sued, and it's illegal to cloud seed in Pennsylvania. And so weather modification, I don't think there's a lot of that going on. I'm sure there might be a few groups of scientists here and there that are trying experiments, but more so probably out over oceans and far away from land. So that's called weather modification, and there's not a lot of that that I know of or read about in many, many years going on over at least where we live, over the United States. Thanks for your comments and questions. And that splitting of rain approaching a city, I hear it from people in Champaign-Urbana all the time and other places. So I just want to emphasize when I ask those questions, I don't think that there's anything unusual about that question or call. It's just, unfortunately, there's nothing I can say that makes those callers happy, because I don't have any statistics to back up that observation.
Well, I'm sure that I'll bet I look at a weather radar at least once a day, and if there's a lot of storms, probably more than once. And I guess I'm sure that I've seen both things happen. A line of thunderstorms comes toward Champaign-Urbana, and somehow it breaks up, or it somehow goes around. But at the same time, you know, quite often you've seen, you know, lines of heavy storms come through, hit Champaign-Urbana. We could get half an inch, three quarters, we get an inch of rain in a relatively short period of time.
So. Sometimes they pop up right over us. Yeah. They don't move in. All of a sudden there's a storm. And, you know, and if it makes her and others that have perceived this feel any better, when you go to meteorology schools, students there, they're looking for the storms. They want to see the storms. And I can tell you, whether it's Norman, Oklahoma, or State College, Pennsylvania, or Madison, Wisconsin, or any other place where there's a big meteorology program, they'll always say it's the fill-in-the-town name effect. I remember the State College effect where the storms were splitting while I was at Penn State. And here it's the Champaign-Urbana effect. You know, just,
yeah, exactly.
So it's even at least jokingly observed by meteorologists. But statistically, you don't find that to be the case.
All right. We have time, certainly, for some other callers.
We have calls.
We have calls, so let's go to Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for the interesting program, and I have a question and a comment. My question is, being from Norman, Oklahoma, where when they give tornado warnings, they tell you where it is, what F rating it is, how fast it's moving, when it's going to arrive at your destination, where you are. And here, in other places I've lived, more often the sirens are blown when one hasn't actually been sighted, or, I mean, the information is just not as thorough. And I didn't know if that was a result of the region that we are in with the storm is the National Severe Weather Service, or if it's a result of the fact that in areas that have more of this kind of weather, the media invests more in technology to provide that information. And my comment was, and I wasn't going to comment on this, but since misinformation was shared, I'm a transportation planner, and we had Federal Highway Administration experts in here last February to do a pedestrian safety action and planning workshop, and they were horrified to learn that we did not have a snow removal policy for our sidewalks. And according to them, the issue of liability for clearing your sidewalks is an urban myth, and that you are not liable if you've made a good faith effort to clear your sidewalks, and that most communities have those policies. Given how many people we have walking here, 17% of the people in Urbana and 12% in Champaign walk to work, it's something that we need to be paying attention to.
Okay. Well, on that last one, I'll just say things do get settled in court, and if there's statutes on the books, that's something that can be used in court. But I do know that every year there are a lot of what are called slip and fall legal cases. They occur. And That is a concern. When there's an unnatural accumulation of snow, somebody can
Sure, someone can sue you for walking down your sidewalk.
That's right, and I'm not advocating one way or another. That was just pretty much put out there. Actually, somebody else brought that up that called in, but it is a true concern or issue out of all of that. But as far as what you're saying about Norman, Oklahoma, there's a variety of issues of which you articulated, I think, pretty well. They're in the middle of Tornado Alley. The Oklahoma City market is probably the, if not the most invested in weather coverage, one of the most invested in weather coverage with helicopters and Doppler radars, and they have teams that actually go out and chase storms and send back photographs, and it's the weather wars down there. That's the big ratings number one story for those stations. So they invest a lot of time and money and have pinpoint where things are. Now, if they tell you the F rating when before it hits, that you can't really do that.
Well, they're guessing.
Yeah, they're guessing on that. But they certainly have a lot more invested in that. And around here, the commercial TV stations are really, frankly, pretty cheap. The ownerships are from other states, and they do things on the cheap. And there they also have the Storm Prediction Center located in Norman, Oklahoma. You have probably the best tornado scientists and forecasters right there in the Norman area. They're not here. So there's just not much done here compared to, say, in that part of the world. So that's why it's not as sophisticated here as it is there. And, of course, unfortunately, with the disaster in Moore in 1999, they handled that well. But that also re-energizes the whole community to make sure. It takes a disaster, unfortunately, a lot of times to get a community to really get all the ducks in a row for future disasters. And over time, when you haven't had a disaster for a while, complacency starts to set in. And that goes with the media, and that goes with government and everything else. It just, the focus is on the most recent. And so you came from an area that's probably the most well-protected in terms of warning and information.
Well, I do listen to WILL whenever there's bad weather rather than the TV station. So.
Well, we appreciate that. Thanks.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
And do just real quick, again, we're trying to talk about winter weather. But as far as tornadoes are concerned, from area to area, are there different, do they have different policy about when it is they will sound the warning siren?
Well, the sirens are sounded in Champaign, Urbana, Savoy, by the county EMA officials. And basically, they sound them if they see a tornado, a funnel cloud, or a rotating wall cloud. If they feel that there's a threat a tornado is going to touch down Champaign, Urbana, Savoy, they'll sound the sirens. And for the whole area, because I know there's one case where there was one down near Savoy last year, and somewhere in North Urbana, North Champaign, we're wondering, why are the sirens going off? But it's a call made at the EMA office based on the information they have from their spotters. And I know that at times it's hard to make the decision, so they maybe err on the side of caution. Mm-hmm. And there's not always a touchdown when the siren goes off. The visibility around here isn't as good as it is out in the plains, so sometimes you're not able to see it coming in from many miles out. So there's a lot of complicating factors. But, personally, I think spotter training in this part of the country could be better. Most organizations just get one class a year from the National Weather Service, and there's a lot of good active volunteer spotters out there, but I think the training around here isn't as good as it is out in the plains, and that's one thing that could help improve the whole program. But that's just the way it is here. I think that they do their best, and the emergency managers, try to do their best. I know it's a dilemma for them every time they're debating whether to sound the sirens or not. Yeah. And when you hear the sirens go off during stormy weather, take shelter.
Yeah, that means someone has sight, to the best of their ability, they have sighted.
Yes.
They say, I have seen a funnel cloud, I have seen rotation. It's not just because they think it's maybe going to be there. They're saying,
there's something that's
I've seen it. Yeah.
And it's been seen here in the Champaign-Urbana area. It's not a radar-detected thing.
Yeah. We'll see if we could try real quick our last caller here, Urbana, line two. Hello.
Sorry. Sorry to raise a very big topic in very short time. Who do you think has the best model right now for predicting long-term seasonal effects of the East Pacific warming or cooling?
I don't know if I have any preferred model for that, actually. And that actually gets more into the climate areas where I'm not as day-to-day on anyway. I can tell you for the 10-day to 2-week period of time, it varies. The European model's been pretty good on that. At times, the Canadian model's good. Once in a while, the U.S. model surprises us, but I think the European models definitely had the edge over the last several years on that what I call the medium range out a week or two. Beyond that, once you get into the climate areas, I don't have a preferred model, really, and part of that is because I don't really forecast in that realm.
All right. Well, there we're going to have to stop. Our chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser, we appreciate you being here. And then tomorrow morning on Morning Edition and also on the AFT Mag, people are traveling. They'd like to have a forecast for the place they're going. We're going to do Talk To.
We're going to do that tomorrow at 7:50 a.m. and 12:40 p.m. And we have special editions next week in advance of the Thanksgiving holiday. And on Tuesday during the afternoon magazine at 12:40, we'll take calls. And also on Wednesday morning at 7:50. So if you're not traveling until Wednesday or Thursday of next week, you don't have to call tomorrow. You can wait until next week and we'll have more details at that time. You're free to call tomorrow, but
tomorrow we
really want to focus on those that are leaving ahead during this upcoming weekend.
All right. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Well, my pleasure. It's always fun.